Hey there, Lexa from the future here. Before we get into it, I just wanted to mention that if what the analytics tell me is true, there's a good chance that there are some folks who are listening from the Ukraine right now. And if this is you, I just wanted to let you know that politics aside, and for whatever it's worth, me and several other people from the Green Mushroom Project have been sending spores in your direction. May they find you in safety. Much love.
Lux Occult is part of the Green Mushroom Podcast Network.
Omega, Omega, Alpha, Kilo, Delta, Nevada, Nevada, Mike, Lima, Kilo, Rosa, Sierra, Alpha, Nevada, Omega, Alpha, Echo, Alpha, Omega,
Bravo, Delta, Delta, Quebec, Oscar, Oscar, Oscar.
I'd like the real thing or nothing at all. Substitutions seldom satisfy. Keep your plastic trash and surface sheen. Miss me with your mass-produced simulacra. I want the feeling of a hand as it slides into a glove, the crispness and wax of a bitten lemon, the embrace of firm arms after work hard won, the reassurance of steady ground. Don't try to sell me quicksand and shrug when things start to sink. I'll always find my way to understandings. To see what manner of creature you are, I'd unfold your mind and exuviate your exterior, then crack the bones of these dissections to sample their marrow for depth. All will become clear. In the course of these investigations, patterns coalescing in bright phosphorescence until shapes can be traced and vectors measured. I want to slip below the surface of this dream you spin, like a scalpel between layers of flesh, like honey sliding into tea. The viscosity of the moment when synchronicity strikes, like many hands clapping. Give me the real thing, or keep it all. I'd rather unzip my chest and peel back ribs to expose a fiery heart than dance in the disguise of flattery and invisible couture. I want the real thing. Fuck your labels and ranks and other assorted arbitrary appellations for requests of unearned adulation. I feel only contempt. I want the real thing. I know the taste of it, its savor, and its sweetness. Substitutions do not satisfy. That is Creatures in the Mirror by Sally Forth. Hello and welcome to Lux Occult. This is the podcast where we gleefully taunt the mundane, butcher the Latin and most other languages, and we also discuss a variety of occult topics. I'm your host, Lux Estrada, and if you're hearing the sound of my voice, then that means that this show, and magic for that matter, are for you, if you want them. There are a lot of different ways to be more free, and using magic or making space for a spiritual practice in your life can be one of them. As always, I don't speak for anybody but myself. Others can, will, and should disagree sometimes. How would we ever learn anything if we all agreed all the time after all? And like anybody who tries to be reasonable should be willing to do, I am willing to revise my opinions based on new evidence. All right, I'm very excited to be presenting today's episode to y'all. I was joined by the always insightful Aidan Wachter to talk about his new book, Changeling, A Book of Qualities. And we talk about a bunch of other stuff too. Aidan is probably somebody who might not need an introduction, but just in case, here is one. Aidan Wachter has been actively involved in magical practices since the 1980s. His work reflects a wide-ranging, eclectic, and non-dogmatic approach with influences from many paths. His books focus on the practice of the craft as a learnable set of skills that can be developed rather than innate talents that must be inherited or granted to the seeker. They are field guides rather than philosophy. All right, fuck yeah. So good stuff. Definitely check that out. So you might have heard Aiden here on the show in the past talking about Hyper Sigils, his book Weaving Fate, as well as Imaginal Magic, and a lot more. And if you haven't heard those episodes, you definitely won't want to miss them. And if another awesome conversation with the one and only Aiden Wachter wasn't enough, there is also going to be a special bonus treat in today's another episode within an episode, if you will, which is a format that y'all have told me that you like, so I'm trying to play with it. I sat down for a snack-sized conversation with my very impressive friend, Joy, to hear about her new mimetic project, A Culture Jammer, which you can check out on Instagram. I'm really excited about how much conceptual overlap there seemed to be in regard to some of what both Aiden and Joy talk about today, so it's always cool when that works out. Okay, so before I go any further, I'd like to say thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate you taking the time to hang out with me here on the show. I'm super lucky to have such awesome fucking listeners and collaborators and everything. You all are the best. Avoidant to social media, though I may be. I always do welcome people's thoughts, questions, comments, suggestions, or arcane revelations. You can reach me at LuxOccultPod at gmail.com, or you can find me on Instagram at LuxOccultPod. If you like the show and you're into what I'm doing, you can support it on Patreon. If you do so, you can take a bibliomancy break with me, and there are no tiers or levels or whatever, so give as you will. And thank you so much to everybody who is already doing so. Your support really means a lot, and it makes the show possible for me to do, so I really appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, I want to give a shout out to Keats Ross, Derek Hunter, Eric J. Millar, Michelle Embry, and everybody else participating in the We the Hallowed Spring Equinox streaming event, Hauntquinox. I'm very honored to be included, looking forward to presenting a video I made for one of the songs from the new album I've been working on. Which still doesn't have a title yet, but I'm getting close to one. I think I see the edges of it. Anyway, so this is going to be on the Pragmagic YouTube channel, and there's going to be a link to that in the show notes. And if you're hearing this after the fact, no worries, you can still check out a recording of the event and all that. So yes, don't miss the conversations that I had with Keats Ross and Derek Hunter and Eric J. Millar in earlier eps of this show either. Okay, I will be back later to give you some updates about the Green Mushroom Project, talk about the full moon, and introduce the episode within the episode featuring Joy. But first, back to the matter at hand. So as is typically the case, Aiden Wachter offers a lot of great advice and interesting insights in today's conversation. Since discovering his stuff, he's been a huge inspiration to me and has also been really cool and supportive of the show and of my other work, like the Green Mushroom Project, which I really fucking appreciate. So thank you so much, Aiden. You can find his work at aidenwachter.com, and I highly recommend you check his stuff out. Super dope. But yeah, anyway, without further ado, it is my honor to present another very dope conversation with the all-purpose badass Aiden Wachter. Wachter, thank you so much for coming back and talking with me again. How are you?
I am good, and thank you for having me again. I'm super excited, as always, to chat with you. So,
fuck yeah. Well, I'm super stoked to have you here. We're going to be talking about your new book, Changeling, a book of qualities, among other things. We can talk about whatever you want, but I definitely do want to talk about that since
you're
here.
That's great. That's great. Well, you're, as we said, I spoke with Dara right when the book came out, but I haven't spoken to anybody else. So that's a good thing to focus on.
Hell yeah. Well, I think one of the first things that sort of like stood out for me about this book was that it was really honest about the fact of something that I've felt, and I don't think like maybe gets talked about enough, which is the idea that like in order to sort of fully step into your power, you're going to have to maybe do some repair to the vessel, as you sort of contextualized it, being honest about like, you know, yes, you can use magic to heal yourself, and that's a legitimate way to go and a very like practical way to go too. Looking at what you've laid out, it sort of like to me spoke as a being a way of moving from like a sort of reactionary position to like a proactive position.
Yeah, you know, I think that was, we talked earlier when we were talking about the book, that this one was very much guided by my allies. I was kind of, I mean, they all are, but this one was This one, they hammered me because I was kind of, my head was somewhere else. It was not totally unrelated, but that concept of the vessel is really the thing that kicked in first to kind of, that's where I kind of understood what they wanted, where they were coming from. Because I think in a lot of cases, and this is probably, I think we've talked about it before, but it's good to put out there that for a lot of us, it's not, this communication isn't necessarily crystal clear, right? That we get guidance, but it's more like the driver's ed teacher keeps turning the wheel a little bit to keep you from going into oncoming traffic rather than necessarily saying, do this like this and everything will be great, you know? And so that idea of the vessel was really hugely helpful for me to kind of get a hang on the whole thing. And what that is in this case is this idea of, when we look at witchcraft, we think about the cauldron and the cup, and depending on, in magic, we see these things. And then kind of in the way that I talk about vessels in six ways as kind of containers for power, right? Mm-hmm. But we're really functionally that thing. You know, we've, this body, this neurology is a vessel.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And just due to the nature of living, and I think living in a very I won't say entirely unnatural because it's, but in a very built system that's not necessarily conducive to being healthy. We don't really view ourselves that way. We really view our identity as being this really solid, tangible item, right?
Sure.
Instead of kind of a conglomeration of things that we've gathered together within this being that we call us, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I've shared this on your phone. There's a song by on this show, but Danny Schmidt has a song called "This Too Shall Pass," and there's a line in it that, if I remember right, says, we think too big, we think ourself is one whole thing, and we claim that this collection has a name and is a being. And the vessel kind of idea kind of looks to that, like, what are all of these aspects of ourselves that we pull together to say, this is me? And are they in good shape? And is that both the contents in the container in good shape? Or are we kind of leaking everywhere? If we look at the world around us right now, it's more like everybody seems to, a lot of people, the people that have at least got platform, seem to mostly be kind of spraying everywhere, you know? And so if we begin there with that idea of that we ourselves are this vessel that is filled with certain things, and that we get to decide what we hold. And part of that process is also realizing what things we hold that we didn't really decide to hold, but we're doing it anyway. And what things are we holding that are kind of toxic to us? And so that's kind of that main piece there. And then it was kind of funny as the book was coming together, really, because I didn't really intend to write a book on witchcraft. And I kind of realized that I could view witchcraft, or we could view different things as well, but in this case, witchcraft, as a particular kind of vessel in itself. That it's a kind of a conceptual vessel that, or conceptual container that holds all sorts of ideas and practices and ways of being. And so all of those things are, those are kind of the baseline ideas that all came together to become the book.
Hell yeah. Yeah, I really like how you've sort of gotten back to the sort of fundamentals of it, instead of viewing witchcraft as a sort of, I don't know, corpus of, you know, books or of a collection of practices. You've looked at, well, witchcraft is what a witch does. Okay, well, what does that mean? Like, who is a witch? And then here come the list of qualities, right? Mm-hmm. So I really like thinking about it from that perspective, because it really does put the authority back in the hands of the practitioner, right? And I think you're very explicit about this. Like, even in the very beginning of the book, you say, like, look, all of these practices will need to be adapted for your own use. Like, there is not a right way to do this, you know, per se, right? Like, there's practices outlined, and they're very, you know, they're simple enough, but also direct enough to be very useful, and also very easy to adapt to whatever an individual might have going on in terms of, like, their symbol sets or whatever they're working with. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a big part of what I'm interested in. Part of it is we've had this explosion in the last 20 years. It really started in the 90s, but then it blew up again, I guess. And I don't know, there was kind of a pause where the magical world really exploded more into the mainstream. And then with the rise of social media, people were able to get together and kind of, you know, create platform for themselves if they wanted to, and find others that they wanted to play with. But with that came a lot of, in my mind, over definition process, which I just don't see makes sense. And I know we've talked about kind of that kind of deep time perspective that I think we've been doing this stuff for 100,000, 200,000, half a million years.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I definitely want to talk about like religions as being hyper sigils and stuff. I love that. So, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that like we can come up with all these definitions, but they're all generally really incredibly recent. And so it's kind of like, do you want to be defined by the person you are 20 years ago, or that you were 20 years ago? And more explicitly, do you want to be defined by the definitions people placed on you then, or placed on you based upon looking at your tracks online of then, right? Because this is kind of what we're working with when we're working with all these non-direct lineage systems, right? This is different in something like Santeria or Lukumi, where there has been continuous transmission, you know?
Sure. But I mean, even within those traditions, as far as I understand, like from hearing people speak on them and talking to people, is that there is a lot of individual variation just based on who your teacher is and who, you know, how people do things. So even there might not be like a, I don't know, it's very nuanced, right?
Absolutely. Well, and I think that's the other, if there's a piece here that's kind of, that's the biggest thing for the moment, is probably that piece about nuance, right? Because we really moved into a place where politically and through media and through the politicization of social media, and I'm not talking specifically about party politics here, but just general human politics, there's a massive push to kind of enforce binary thinking, that you're for it or against it. You're for this person or against it. It's rather than saying this is a person and people are complex and there's stuff that I don't like about this person or about their thinking or about their actions, but this doesn't mean necessarily that they are evil or that I should never listen to them on anything. There's people that I listen to or go to for information that I disagree with the majority of what I can tell is kind of their social politic, but their thinking isn't wrong on everything, even if I think it's wrong on those things.
Yeah, I can think of examples like that for myself as well. Absolutely, yeah.
And so I think, yeah, playing with, you know, that was part of that. The other thing was interesting writing this book was it really forced me to look at my history of experience with witchcraft and go, why did I not claim this as a primary identity, right? Mm-hmm. When that was very much present around me. And in many ways, that fit better than a lot of other things. And it had to do with that idea that there was a lot of very clear statements that this is what witchcraft is. And I didn't really fit in with those, even though it was something that I practiced. So I always steered clear of it as any kind of a definition. And so then when I went back to like read kind of the earliest books that I read that really affected me. And that got me back to, you know, my favorite book, which is Aradia, but also rereading Margaret Murray and rereading Gardner, though I don't find him very readable. And really looking at how interesting that vision of witchcraft that exists in Murray and Leland's work. And I didn't mention it in the book, but for those that are looking at Leland, Aradia isn't the only thing relevant. And you should try and find a copy of Tales of Florence and Etruscan Roman Remains. I haven't seen those books in a long time.
Yeah, and for people that haven't read the book or heard your excellent conversation with Dara on Spirit Box podcast, could you just go a little bit into Aradia?
Sure. So the first of the books that we have that I think of as being important to the formation of modern witchcraft, and that's not an academic term. What I'm really talking about is things, you know, late 1800s on. I think it was written in 1899 or published in 1899. And Leland was, I believe, an amateur anthropologist and folklore collector. I don't think he was specifically trained as an academic in that. And I could be wrong there. And he traveled around Florence and Italy and Aradia kind of, I believe, came out of that book, Tales of Florence, that when he was collecting folk tales, some of what he collected was from this woman, Maddalena. And it was these stories about how Diana and Lucifer came. The mythology behind it is that Diana was the moon and Lucifer was the sun. And Diana wanted her brother. She loved her brother. And tried to get it together with him, and he wasn't into it. So eventually she turned into a cat. She turned herself into a cat. They got it on.
Wait, so he was like, okay, no thanks, sister, but hey, sexy cat.
Hey, sexy cat. Let's do it.
I know mythology is mythology and allegorical. I just want to make sure I'm keeping up.
This is all by memory, so it's, you know, okay. I'm not the king of specific
sure.
verbatim memory, but this is the story as I remember it.
Okay.
And so Aradia was born from this. And through the course of things, she was sent to Earth to basically become kind of the leader of the witches in, we assume, in this Italian zone, Italy. And specifically to help kind of deal with the oppression of women and others that were qualified as witches at that time by the church and by the kind of political power there. Mm-hmm. And so it's this really explicitly revolutionary view of witchcraft, that it's directly anti-oppressor work.
Okay, and I like the sort of like Luciferian idea of Aradia being like created from this like stolen fire. Like, that's pretty dope.
Right. I mean, there's a lot in there that's very interesting. And also it's interesting from that idea of, I think it shifts that concept too, that it's like, there's often a view, there's a lot of discussion going on right now from people, once again, looking at, you know, does the concept of the devil or Lucifer or anything have a place in witchcraft? And I think it definitely does, not in all of it. But it's also important to realize that those terms don't necessarily mean what the church says they mean. And so you look at that and you go, okay, so we're literally talking about the daughter of the sun and moon as magical powers being sent down to aid us. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's a very cool book. It's the root of things like, if we look at like The Charge of the Goddess that Doreen Valiente wrote for Wicca, that's roots are in Leland. And Leland then was something that Margaret Murray knew about. And she came to the conclusion, based mostly on witch trial documents, that this really had been a survival of old pagan religion that was persecuted by the church, and that we had this coven structure where there were a certain number of members, and there was the kind of, if we were going to look at it from a traditional witchcraft view, kind of the figure that takes the role of the witch father. You know, it's kind of traditional, what we think of now as coven structure comes from her. And both of these people's work from an academic standpoint has been really slammed. And I mentioned this in the book. I'm not saying that that's wrong to view that, because there's rules in academia that they didn't necessarily go by.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
but I don't know that it matters from the view of a practicing magician or a practicing witch viewing it from a religious point of view. And so my take on it when I was rereading these things was going like, these things are spells. These works were really changing the story about what a witch was. Because what a witch was, and if you still look for definition that isn't taking in modern neo-pagan witchcraft, it generally is, witchcraft is malefic magic performed by women. Mm-hmm. Which is, of course, the church definition.
Sure. Just looking into that, you can see all kinds of insecurities exposed, right?
And it's also interesting when you look at the things that witches are, what are the bad things that they do, right? which is that they're disobedient. Mm-hmm. They don't play the game the way you're supposed to play the game. And that might be, if we really look at who even got persecuted, that might be the definition of who got persecuted, when it wasn't kind of, you know, inter-family or inter-town vendettas using the existing legal structures to get one over on somebody you needed to get one over or wanted to get somebody over on. Is it's always been the real issue there is not playing along.
Yeah. And just kind of coming back to, like, you know, as you were saying, like, this sort of narrative that was created through telling these stories and, you know, this sort of perhaps like feedback loop that that created as people began to practice in this way and began to, you know, make it a reality. And this is one of the other things, like, you know, I mentioned the healing thing earlier, but the idea of like hyper sigils is another, you know, little thread that weaves through this book and then the previous book, Weaving Fate, which also does have some great, you know, healing techniques in there as well. I should want to point that out to people that haven't checked it out.
Yeah, totally.
But I just love this story, like, or this sort of like contextualization of the witch or the like changeling or whatever as like being one of the people who is like the keeper of the story as it continues to unfold.
I love that idea. Yeah, I think that's a big piece of it, really, is going, do you accept the story you've been given? And a lot of us don't accept it about the culture, right? The greater overculture, whatever, however we want to view that. But a lot of the times we do accept it about ourselves. And so we have, if we think about it, we view ourselves as being broken or being inadequate, or we go, you know, for whatever reason, whether that's gender identity or neurodivergence or whatever, we view ourselves as being less than what is required to, you know, get it done, versus kind of viewing like, do I actually believe that that's true? Do I have proof that that is true? That isn't more story from outside, right? Because really hyper sigils, which is kind of what we were talking about earlier, is viewing these kind of early witchcraft texts as being hyper sigils, like they created the form of witchcraft that we think of now when we're talking about my book Changeling, or a lot of witchcraft as it's viewed in, you know, at least North America and Europe these days, that these are stories of power, and that it is really crucial that we take, that we get into the driving seat and that we pick up the pen, you know, metaphorically or in reality, and go and start editing and start rewriting and to figure out what story actually works for us, and realize that that is the criteria, because very few stories have, how would I say, very few stories are actually in any way that can be objectively, concretely true. They're descriptions of things, not the things themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm glad that you touched on this too, because this was another thing that I did want to mention, was quality 10, a witch takes what is given. And you address something in there which you call the spectrum of fantasias, right? And I just wanted to to say thank you so much, because this is something that comes up all the time. And I know that we've spoken about this. We had a nice conversation about this last time you were here, about these, you know, different ways of visualizing, or even that term is very problematic. But anyway, you know, we're all working with different stuff. We all have a different hand that we're dealt, and we have to play that hand. I just really appreciate like how inclusive your work is, because I think that that's something that it's really easy for people to sort of overlook, like not even realizing that there are these differences out there that exist, you know, and like just kind of calling, you know, up, as you mentioned earlier, like, you know, maybe you feel like you're super different, or, you know, you're broken, or whatever it is, like, you know, you have these differences, these divergencies, whatever it is, you have the ability to, you know, move into the driver's seat, and to if you feel like you're constantly like fending the world off from like beating you up, it's hard to attack the world, right? Like, and it's like, right, about moving from that like position. I'm a fan of action movies, as you know, so maybe that's like a reductive way of saying it, I feel like. And also, I wanted to say thank you for using the word they.
You know, this one was really interesting, because it was that one. I realized I've tried to be as inclusive as possible. Weaving Fate was kind of interesting because X showed up as she did, and so it made sense to write her as she showed up.
Oh, yeah. But when you're talking about a general just person amorphously,
yeah,
right?
Like, yeah, totally. It wouldn't have worked, and she wasn't into it. But so this one was a good place to go. Let's drop that stuff. It's not necessary in this context, you know. Yeah, there's a guy. I can't remember what his name is. Anyway, he's a strongman competitor, but the first time that I saw a quote from him was, he said, things don't happen to me, I happen to things. And, you know, that's definitely not entirely ever true, but it's an attitude that one could put on as at times as being important and useful.
Yeah, that's a vibe that you could, if you could embrace that, like that could take you places, right?
Like, right. And it's like, you guys, it's like anything else. It's like, again, these things are all stories. They're all tools. Mm-hmm. And so it's figuring out what to pick up. You know, one of the other things at one point when I was super messed up, somebody told me, he said, you know that you're, when you break a bone and it heals in general, that healed part of the bone is now the strongest part of the bone. Mm-hmm. And that you said, you know, this is true too when we weld metal. If we do it right, the weld is now stronger than anything else there. And so he was really speaking to, like, you know, we got to do our repair work because that is what it makes us stronger. It's not just that we're less broken now. And there's ways that what happens to us can actually produce something better. So this is not that there's a silver lining to everything, because there isn't. And I think that's one of the things that I really tried to look at in this book, and the allies really forced me to look at when I was writing it, was we're trying to do something that is not, it's not universally effective. We can't always make the best of bad situations. We can just do the best that we can within bad situations, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's a really important thing, because there's so much kind of, there's so many different layers. It's kind of like the mindset piece, right? That there's people that think, like, if I can force myself to never think anything other than that I am the shit, I will be the shit.
Or you'll just be very delusional.
Or you'll be very deluded, you know? There's a balance to all of this stuff. And for me, it's like, yeah, the aphantasia piece, I really wanted to kind of force that out there in depth somewhere, so that quality 10 was what won for that one, is that's a really easy place for people to think that they can't really do magic, mm-hmm. or that they can't be good at it, or that somebody is way better than them. And it's just this, it's not real. It's simply that you might need to operate in a different sphere. You know, I think about, I had the experience once of being in a gym with somebody who was in a wheelchair, and he challenged me to a pull-up and dip contest. And to make it fair, he strapped himself into his wheelchair.
Okay.
He's like, I don't have a lot of weight on my legs, so I'll add this in and we'll see how this goes. That didn't change his condition. It's just that he learned to do what he could within it. Right. And it was also he totally smoked me.
I was going to ask who.
No, he totally smoked me.
That does not surprise me, right? Like, yeah.
Well, and this was that thing. And he's somebody that I talked to about this kind of stuff with early on, before I really began relating it to magic, was he's like, sure, this is the hand I was dealt. And there's nothing that will change that. But I get to control what it means. And I think that that's the biggest piece to so much of our situation, because things are really hard. The world situation is really hard. The situation for most individuals in the world right now is really hard, but we do get to decide how we frame that story. And if we frame that story, right, the Buddhists might tell us, you don't frame that story. You just see it as true and you move on, you know?
Sure. I mean, if that way of thinking works for you, that's not one that usually works for me. But yeah, people, yeah, definitely. There's all kinds of ways of looking at it, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just that I'm a control freak and I like to think that I have some kind of way of contextualizing it that might change it, even if it's just for me or whatever, right?
Totally. Like, no, yeah. I'm with you. I'm red. I'm torn between two lovers, acting like a fool. As the song goes, I sit right in the middle there, like, fuck.
Which is a good place to be as a magician, actually.
Yeah, I could just let it all go, but I think I could shift that.
Or a witch, I should say. Because I was thinking about this, and actually, last time we spoke, this wasn't for the show, but last time we spoke, like, I talked to you about, like, this kind of dichotomy between the witch and the magician, and I have so many thoughts about it, and this is obviously a nuanced topic, as any semantic debate is. But after reading Changeling, I put it down and I said, you know what? I am fully confident, you know, calling myself a witch in this context of what it means in this book. So thank you.
Absolutely. Well, that's good. That's what happened to me. You know, that was literally it. I was kind of like, why do you want me to write the book on witchcraft? And they're like, well, because we want you to come to terms with this. It's like, okay, I can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there was so much there. Just, I mean, and even hearing you talk like with Dara and others, like this idea of like, well, things just not quite making sense without magic, right? Like, just I don't know, this idea like just shit just doesn't quite add up the same way for you as it seems to be for other people. And this might, again, this might be like a neurodivergence thing. I have no idea.
I don't know if I talked to you about this, but I know I've talked to somebody on a podcast or two about it. When I hit that point where I kind of went, oh, okay, I'm definitely neurodivergent as I understand that, right? Mm-hmm. This is not, I may not be clinically. I don't know. I've never done any tests.
Yeah, is that even like interesting?
Is that interesting? Not really. I don't need to go and do that.
Tell me, like, it's not going to change my experience per se. I don't know.
But what it did do was it gave me a lot of available power, because I went, oh, all this shit that I don't understand could be because I'm not neurologically designed to understand it. This isn't a flaw. Right? This doesn't have to be a flaw. This doesn't have to be a bad thing. It's just something to be aware of, that when there's things going on in the people world that I'm just like, ooh, well, that's really odd.
What the actual fuck?
What the actual fuck? It gave me the ability to go, okay, that's just that thing. I have different skill set. I have different sensor. They have radar, I have sonar, whatever, you know, and we pick up different things. Yeah, if I think that if there's something that's kind of a running theme through all of my stuff, it's probably that, right? That there's no one way to do magic. There's no one way to be a person. And if we don't understand that in a world that is incredibly judgmental of anything over that doesn't look like it's meeting with the status quo, there's way more problems than need to happen, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And without realizing that, you know, that you are the one to, in the end, the source of authority for yourself, you sort of have to be, it will be really easy for people or powers that be to manipulate you. So,
right. Yeah. Most definitely.
Okay. How about we take a bibliomancy break?
Cool.
All right. Fuck yeah. Hey, what's up? It's me, Luxa from the future. I hope you're enjoying the episode so far, my awkwardness aside. I had an awesome time talking with Aiden, as always. We're going to be getting into that bibliomancy break in a little while after a short chat with Joy about a culture jammer. But first, because this episode is being released on a full moon, and also a Fungal Friday, happy Fungal Friday, I thought it would be fitting to share a lunar greeting from Changeling, a book of qualities, which is presented in the context of working with the moon as an ally. All right, so this is what Aiden has written. Hail Luna, beautiful one, you who silver this dark land. Shining one, watch over me. Let your witch light brighten my ways, strengthen my heart. Bless my vision, guide my feet to better paths. All right, fuck yeah. And now I am pleased to present a short but potent conversation with someone who I have had the honor and privilege of working with and whose intelligence and integrity is deeply fucking inspiring to me. Here is my conversation with Joy about her project, A Culture Jammer. And there will be a link to that in the show notes. All right, here we go.
Thank you.
Okay, well, I am here today with Joy to talk about her new project, A Culture Jammer. Joy, how's it going, dude?
It's going good. How are you?
Good. I'm super fucking stoked to have you here and talk about this project. People might remember you from some of the green mushroom chats and astral temple experiments and stuff, but I'm super stoked to have you here to talk about your own shit.
I'm super stoked to be here.
Hell yeah. So I'm so curious to hear a little bit about this project. Can you sort of give me like a sum up, like in a nutshell, what is A Culture Jammer?
Yeah. So the name of the project is a portmanteau of the word occult and the term culture jammer. And if folks aren't familiar with the term like culture jamming, I would highly recommend giving that a Wikipedia spin. But the project's essentially what I might call like an art sigil project. It lives only on social media, and the intent is to stimulate an increase in critical thinking in those who behold it, kind of with an angle of boosting our collective capacity for discernment, which I think is part of a larger path to sovereignty and desperately needed at this moment.
Fuck yeah, I totally agree. So could you tell me a little bit about like the background? Like, how did you come to this work?
Yeah, so I guess in this culture that I'm subjected to and participate in, there's been a heavy undertow of polarity over the past several years in public discourse and media, and it's been growing and winding its way into personal discourse at a pretty prolific rate. We see this, you know, on social media a lot, where people kind of just can't even communicate with each other anymore or decide what's accurate information, that kind of thing. And I think that the effects of this kind of illusion of dichotomy are dangerous on many levels. But I think the worst is on the personal level, because it changes us, you know. It creates and cements like new neurological pathways based in dualistic thinking. And then when we're afraid or stressed or spent or whatever, we're more apt to just go with that ditch that's already been dug, right? Mm-hmm. So, because there's less resistance there. Yeah, but where's that path taking you? That's the ultimate question, right? So we need to be able to opt out, or rather than get stuck choosing the lesser of two evils, pick a third evil. Like, make it up if you have to, as an act of autonomy, rather than being backed into a corner. At least your path won't be predetermined by someone else in that way. But the thing is, you know, like, these kind of dualistic neural tracks detour us away from critique and discernment and asking questions. And it seems to me a lot of folks these days are addicted to producing opinions and unsolicited assertions as a form of engagement, which I think we can do better. But I think that actually also threatens and endangers both the question as a form of exploratory knowing and the querent, because of the highly triggered climate that's been created. It's getting kind of dangerous to ask questions sometimes. So I thought about everything that's been happening, and from kind of maybe an idealistic viewpoint, was wondering, you know, how do you enact large-scale change? What approach can you use without just directly imposing your personal views or what you want, your desired outcomes, on everyone, and fucking with people's free will? So if everyone was able to better think for themselves, even if they, you know, even if they disagree with my personal views, that's still way better than not being able to even talk to each other or not having personal sovereignty, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the sort of game rules in which we exist, the situation where, you know, we are so much more reliant on social media and stuff than ever before, right? I mean, this is just a function of time, but also a function of like what's happened with the pandemic and everything. But within this context, like, the game rules are really set up so that, like, making these, as you said, like, unsolicited assertions about things, or like having a hot take or whatever, like, this is, you get so much positive reinforcement for it, you know, where it, in the past, because it was like kind of antisocial behavior, it would have been negative reinforcement. So everything has just kind of gone topsy-turvy in that way.
Yeah, and I think, kind of speaking in a shorthand way, that in that way, it's stunting for maybe people who have been alive longer than this phenomenon's been kind of acting itself out in this way in this time frame. But I think about younger people too, who grow up in this, and this is the language they're given. This is the means of discourse they're given. And I don't think we're doing them any justice.
Yeah, I don't think it's good either. I don't know. Yes, I think about that too. And it's just such a complex issue. It's like, well, fuck. Like, I don't know. And maybe this is also just a function of technology in general. I mean, I've had conversations about this with people, and it's been pointed out that, you know, when the printing press came out and books became popular, people were like, oh, everybody's going to forget everything because it's just written down, or like, so I don't know. I mean, obviously, we're always going to be changed by technology in terms of how we use it and stuff. But yeah, the way that the game rules have shifted for social interactions, because we're such social creatures, it is very troubling. I agree.
Yeah. And even just with writing, like, I think I've mentioned to you before, I have kind of a love-hate relationship with books. They're so much fun to read, but something happens with words and with language. And I think it's really important when the more levels of abstraction between you and experience, the more complex things get and the harder it is to wind your way back through it to be able to have your own kind of intimate knowing and understanding of what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. So can you talk a little bit about the execution of this project, like the praxis and sort of like what you're working on in that regard?
Sure. So the sigils kind of consist of both art and text prompts, and they work together as points of engagement and inquiry. And it's actually a collaborative project. It's not just me. I work with two servitors on this, and together we kind of craft these things, usually in the form of questions. Then I can get into that a little bit later, but then we also develop parameters for the art, which is then fed as an offering to the final collaborator, which is AI. So to kind of talk about the question part a little bit, because that's really important to me, I think that the reason I have been trying to, like at first I started off with just hashtags, dropping like little breadcrumbs to kind of prompt thought and maybe inspire. But I switched to questions pretty quickly after that, after it just kind of seemed to surface that I think questions can kind of signal, at least to some degree, that you're present. They can be a form of time magic in themselves too. Like, for example, rather than just reacting to something like as a trigger with a knee-jerk reaction, a question is a response. It's rooted in observation, and it may even conjure like a continuation of the moment, because if it's not a rhetorical question, it kind of holds open a portal, like waiting for a response, rather than just closing the door with a period or a declaration. It can kind of stretch time in that way, and it's an escape hatch from that dualistic trench that we're being not taught, but that everybody's kind of participating in, that I was mentioning earlier. And it can also help develop the ability to be ambivalent, like not in the sense of being paralyzed by equal weight of decisions, but kind of in the sense of being able to entertain the idea that there may be multiple candidates for an answer. And maybe all options make sense given different logic or conditions and stuff. And that helps also create empathy, which nurtures resilience. And you can start to see how like an arc from this inquisitive approach goes towards sovereignty, and it also carries power.
Fuck yeah. Yeah, I think there's a lot there. First of all, I fucking love what you said about the question thing. I really, really do. Yeah, sorry, you're just sort of blowing my mind here.
Well, I'll just add, I think of questions as like an invocation of possibility. Like in that way, they're intrinsically a form of magic, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And possibly an art form as well. I haven't quite sussed that one out yet.
So do you think about this as being divinatory in some way, since you're asking questions?
Oh, that's such an awesome question, right? I've thought about this. Oh, man, there are practices of quote divination where it's really a conjuring. Kind of in the same way that I think it might have been, let me think for a second, somebody said something awesome, and I think it was on one of your prior shows. I think it was the dude who makes pottery. He's super cool. You're going to have to edit this part out.
Tyler Firth of Mage Tower Relics?
Yes.
Yeah, very interesting dude, for sure.
Okay. So he said something about kind of like astrology, just not being predictive, but kind of mirroring the currents of what's already happening. And I think questions, if we think of them with divination, are kind of a conjuring where maybe divination actually mirrors your questions. I don't know if I'm making. Does that make any fucking sense? I don't think I'm hitting it. You're gonna have to edit this part out because I'm like totally missing. I'm not being clear here. But
I think it makes sense. I think what you're saying is, you know, in the idea, like it's a very sort of chaos magic idea that, like, you know, these thoughts become real, and when you're asking a question, you're inviting an answer. So
exactly,
an invitation out there, right? Like
yes, it's call and response. And. Mm-hmm. And actually, that's sigils are a form of call and response too, and they're a feedback loop. And that's one of the reasons why I chose to work with AI, not just because it's like super trending right now, but because it's a whole lexicon has been formed, like informed by the associations and archetypes of humans, and it's a feedback loop. And social media has become a feedback loop, and sigils are a feedback loop. So it's, I think of like the Aculture Jammer project as kind of a fractal mirror of feedback in that way, I guess, if that makes sense.
Fuck yeah. Yeah, no, totally, dude. So can you talk a little bit more about your helpers? If you want to, no.
Maybe just a little bit, like, well, probably not.
Okay, that's totally fine. I totally understand.
One of them is the servitor I created with the Green Mushroom Project, the saprotrophic servitor.
Fuck yeah.
And the other one is personal, so I don't want to talk about.
Oh yeah, no, that's totally cool. Yeah, I don't always like to talk about my buddies either. Yes. All right, fuck yeah. How are you hoping that people will interact with this project?
Yeah, so I just want them to read it and look at it and mull it over, and whatever arises for them is good. If a question pulls and conjures anything out of the air for them, that's I'm good. But you know, like, it's also working on a different level too, like not a conscious level. So it's kind of like a drive-by. Once you see it in the feed, you're part of it, so you don't really have a choice.
You've
now
been
you've been infected. 100%. So
very cool. Well, I have to say, like, a lot of the images that are being produced out of this project are incredibly striking, and they have a lot of interesting, you know, I guess I don't know if it's necessarily like symbology, that, like, you know, there's things that I'm seeing in it that are symbolic to me, like they're the kind of images that you can almost like scry into and see a lot of different things going on.
Yeah, that's definitely a huge part of the intention. Everyone will see different things, and I don't really put any Easter eggs in there, but you know, it is AI, so it's pulling from this kind of rich archetypal library that humans, you know, associate a lot of stuff with at a very base level. But then I tweak it and tweak it sometimes to really kind of get something extra out of it.
Fuck yeah. So what has been different about working with AI in opposed to like some of your other work? Is there things that you've had to adjust or anything like that in this particular process?
Yeah, it's interesting. It seems responsive. Like, I will use certain terms and get crap results, and then I have to think about it, or I'll check in with the servitors and they'll have suggestions, and then we'll kind of craft statements and parameters. And I've used different engines and stuff, so I have a bit of a toolbox, but it's interesting how once I start to get in a flow of creating specific types of images or images with a specific theme, it's almost like it understands and is like, oh, that's what you're looking for. Okay, here, cool. And then I can get a pretty good series of images that really hit the nail on the head. So I didn't expect that. I mean, I don't think it's just my gaining a better understanding of how to craft these things, because there's other stuff involved. But it's really interesting.
Hell yeah, that does sound really interesting to have this, like, you know, this kind of interaction going on. It definitely sounds very personal.
Yeah.
Well, gods, I want to hear so much more about this, but I think we should leave it here. Unless there's anything else you would like to share.
No, just it's on Instagram at Aculture Jammer, OCCULTURE, and Jammer. Check it out.
Hell yeah. So definitely check that out, everybody listening. It's very cool stuff. Joy, dude, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me this evening about this very rad project. It's always a joy to talk to you, and I'm so happy to share your fucking rad ideas with my listeners. So fuck yeah.
Thank you. This is awesome.
All right, thanks again so much to Joy for joining me. Don't miss the A Culture Jammer project. Very cool and thought-provoking stuff. Shout out to her and everybody else participating in the Green Mushroom Project. I'll be back later on after the interview with a few updates about that and to share a few closing thoughts. But now, let's get to that bibliomancy break and the rest of my conversation with Aidan Wachter. Cheers.
I still don't have any dice.
That is okay. I have some right here. All right. So, Aidan, do you have a question for the Oracle?
You know, you're the only time I do divination these days.
I know you mentioned before that you're like, you know, if I'm doing divination more than like once or twice a year, things have like really gotten fucky.
Yeah, it's not normal. I have. Okay, this is going to be vague for the people, but it's my divination, so it's okay.
Absolutely.
Will the actions I have taken in the last 24 hours bring about the results I desire?
Okay. Let's see here. We'll be consulting Principia Discordia.
Oh, great.
Let me find it. I'll be right back here.
I think I've got that before, and I think it's funny.
You know, it comes up with a way higher frequency than should be statistically expected, which is also maybe not surprising. I don't know.
I think it's got it in for me because it knows that I'm not really its biggest fan.
That could definitely be the case.
It's like, I'll show you.
You thought you could get rid of me, but here I am. Oh, gosh. All right, let me find it. I will be right back here.
See, it's hiding from me.
Yeah.
It's like causing, we're all working on each other.
You thought you could hide, look, but you were wrong. All right, I have located.
Nice.
It was hiding in plain sight. Oh, Eris. Will the actions that Aidan has taken within the last 24 hours play out as he desires? If you want in on the Discordian society, then declare yourself what you wish, do what you like, and tell us about it. Or, if you prefer, don't. There are no rules anywhere. The goddess prevails. Hell, Eris, thank you.
Awesome. Okay. I may have to revise my thinking about the book.
Yeah. So hopefully that answers your question.
It totally did. I take that as, once again, I think all so far all I've seen is positives, but you know, I'm pretty good at that too. So.
Sure. Okay. I mean, yes. I was thinking it would be cool to do a whole episode on like magical thought and what that means, and yes, all of that. Totally.
Well, I think that is, you know, it's we're in this, it's one of the things that kind of comes to mind from stuff that we were talking about. The kind of kicks up in the book, but it kicks up in a lot of different places too, is we kind of ended up in this place where I think coming out of Chaos Magic, there was this discussion of the different models of magic, right? We have energy models and we have spirit models and we have psychological models, where to me it's clear that what we really have is that all of these things come into play. Mm-hmm. And we may be more or less aware of it at different times, and some things may be at the forefront. But you know, when I was looking at like thinking about how did I learn to work, and I learned to, you know, call upon the powers that be. So that's kind of spirit model. And I learned to call out my energy and direct its flow and kind of convert that energy into usable power and to direct it into the work that I was doing. So that's your energy model. And then one of the things that's become kind of interesting is I see a lot of discussion as if one is real or one is right and one is not. And it ties directly back into that aphantasia issue, right?
Yes. Yes, these discussions exhaust me totally.
it's exhausting. But you go like, why wouldn't it be all of these things?
Or why would you assume that you have the fucking tool set to like measure it in the first place?
Exactly. Like, I don't know. Exactly. And the thing that I think is interesting is then when I look at one of the things that happens when you write books, I discovered, is that people write you and go, I tried this and it didn't work how I wanted it to.
that sounds so odious. I'm sorry.
It's not bad. people are generally pretty good, but it's very interesting to then see what people have latched onto as where they think the power lies.
Sure.
And what they just completely discount completely. And it's not to say I haven't done that. I probably do it all the time, right? But this is not to bag on anybody. This is just stuff to be aware of, which is a big part of this book, right? Is like, these are things that I know that I forget and I need to be reminded of. Or that I know, but I kind of pick a very specific track that I play with it. And I need some help sometimes. So that's how I tend to use that. Is that really what's needed here?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and the things that you outline are there things that are, you know, in terms of the sort of like flow of information and what we're taught or conditioned or whatever, like it's sort of like if you go with the flow, the things that are listed in this book are not going to be a big part of your life. Like the idea of even, you know, the first one is like a witch seeks power, right? Like, and then a witch is like willing to claim the power. And then later on, the witch is willing to cultivate the power. Like, it's a lot of like, you know, there's all these different like ideas of like, you know, you have to keep going with it in order, because it's you're swimming upstream, you're moving against the current of the flow of our culture, right? In some ways, I mean, it doesn't have to be like this for in all situations. Like, obviously, there's going to be little eddies and swirls or whatever in there, but like in a general sense, like it would make sense that this is going to be something that takes maintenance, you know?
Right. Well, and I think that that's one of the things that's very interesting to me about the whole process of magic is it's really easy to kind of latch on to, I think, whether it's witch or magician or sorcerer, whatever you want to use, as a kind of identity that feels empowering, and then just stop right there. And I've done that. I've been in places where I really didn't do anything that I should have done or brought kind of what I know to bear for years. And then something finally got to the place where I went, oh, fuck. I know better than this, but I didn't actually use what I knew, you know. And it is a really interesting, it's this kind of weird conundrum because it's, again, we aren't in control of everything, but we do have influence. And we are largely, if anyone is control of it, is in control of ourselves, meaning that which is contained in whatever we think of as I, right? It's us. And that which is, you know, and I bring it up in the book in a few places. This doesn't mean you can't be locked up or you can't be not in control of your physical world or your physical reality.
Yeah.
But that still that thing of who controls you as you or I as I, it has to be me. There's no one else is doing that. And so it's you know, if there's kind of a message in Changeling, it's so how do you want to do that?
Yeah, definitely. Now, can we talk a little bit about, you know, like the idea of this, you know, yourself and your experiences as sort of being the ultimate authority, and the discussions that people have been sort of having around this idea of unverified personal gnosis, like this idea that, which, you know, I think couched within like this statement, this name, unverified personal gnosis, like there's a little bit of a suggestion that it's like, oh, well, this hasn't been verified by some kind of authority source outside of oneself. Like, oh, that's not what that demon really looks like. Everybody knows he has this hat on or whatever the thing is, you know, totally. Like, not to like, you know, not to get down on this or whatever. I know that there's traditional ways of portraying things. I'm just saying, like, when it comes down to our own experiences, like, I was hoping you could just talk a little bit about that.
Well, it's interesting. I have known a lot of witches who worked within traditions, whether they were created by themselves or not. And within those traditions, they create a framework. They create a framework of spirits and rituals and how you do things, right? And that's the place, I don't remember what they called it, but that's the first place I heard this expressed as a concept. And they viewed it in a very nuanced way. That they were like, for those of us that have been in this space, because a lot of them had been working together for, I think 15 or 20 years at that time, very regularly. They're like, we know what we get and we know what really doesn't fit within that. And so that was where they were kind of looking at that idea. But they weren't, say, discounting when somebody that was got something outside of that. They were like, okay, this doesn't fit with what we've seen in the last 20 years.
Maybe this is something different. That makes a lot of sense.
So maybe this is something different. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you. The whole idea of UVP to me indicates that there's something called verified personal gnosis.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. I mean, what is verified? Who's verifying it for you?
And I'm really not sure who would verify your personal gnosis.
Maybe yourself?
I think it has to be you. Which is why I always go, you know, true enough to be useful is my kind of metric there.
Sure. I go causal potency.
Yeah, totally. You know, it's like, totally. And some of that is really interesting because it's one of the things that I have found and one of the things that gets said a lot that I think is pretty real is that if all of your spirit contacts are just telling you that you're awesome and everything you're doing is awesome and nothing needs to change.
Oh, you must be super awesome, right?
You must be super awesome, but
totally joking.
That is to be questioned.
Yes.
And it doesn't mean necessarily that you are making it up, but you may be working with something that is more interested in just sucking on you than.
Yes. Well, look back in history, like, you know, you're sort of the ruler of your own little kingdom or whatever, if you like to think about things that way. And if you surround yourself with advisors that are just a bunch of yes men going like, oh yeah, you're great, doing a great job, like, no matter what you're doing, like, that might not be useful, right? Like,
right, totally. And so it's interesting because it's like, you know, and this is not to say my allies haven't been supportive. They have been, but they're very supportive for me to do my fucking work. Mm-hmm. In ways that are often distinctly uncomfortable because they know what I don't want to know. and I do know, but I'm avoiding, you know, for the ones that I've been, that are my, really my peeps.
That makes sense.
And so they tend to bring me shit that's a little not, it's not, they're not bringing me the, you know, the cup of coffee and the brownie because I'm feeling a little depressed. They're like,
sure.
Okay. You aren't looking at some shit.
Totally. And this gets back to another quality, which is comfortable with being uncomfortable, because this is, you know, how we grow as individuals. This is where we find our power, in those places of discomfort, like the process of transmuting that into a place of power.
Yeah. You know, it's, I brought in a lot of cliches that came out of everything from kind of new age circles to strength training circles, which there's a lot of crossover.
Sure.
And the getting comfortable with discomfort thing is a big part of that. Like,
I've heard yoga teachers say it a lot.
You know, it's like there's a way that you have to, if you want to move through something that is hard, you have to deal with the fact that it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's not that it becomes easy first. It might become easy later.
Sure.
Once you've gotten through that point. And I think it's not anybody's favorite piece of anything probably, but I think you can learn to use it as a guide. You know, you go, okay, do I want to go and binge out on Netflix because there's something that I'm not doing? Do I not want to confront things because I don't want to deal with what's going to happen afterwards? And and that's a very common one with people because we don't know how they're going to respond. And we would like, most of the time when we try and make changes, we have an idea of how we would like that change to come about, right? And so, yeah, I think, or even being uncomfortable with yourself, that's a really big one. Like, we kind of are creatures of story, and our identity is really the story we tell ourselves and then project out into the world about ourselves. And a lot of the time when we dig in, we find that that's not really accurate. And that process is distinctly uncomfortable, at least for me.
Sure.
Where you go, ooh, I really had a different story about what I do there. And for me to move beyond that, I have to get okay with the fact that that's not right, that that's not correct. It's kind of the meditation thing too, is a great place that I think about that. Like, there's some folks that apparently, when they go pretty deep into meditation, have some kind of unfortunate psychic outcomes. There's some studies that have been done on this now. And that this, the thing that gets missed a lot of the times is that this tends to happen at a pretty high level. It's not usually the front end. That's usually somebody who's like actually at a retreat for a couple weeks, you know, or is in the ashram. And this is not to say this is the only place there, but the process of sitting is physically uncomfortable for most people. The process of learning to just kind of watch what your mind does without judgment is uncomfortable. You know, realizing the places where we might be petty is not comfortable, but we have to learn to kind of embrace those experiences if we want to get to the other side.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like, too, the practice in here that you outline of making a list of the stories about different things and examining how, what do you tell other people about these things? What do you tell yourself about these things? And yeah. It's sort of like this self-honesty. I think it's really, you know, that we could probably contextualize a lot of this under the heading of identity magic or whatever people want to call it, you know,
right. But
call it what you will. It's useful stuff.
I think that, you know, because I'm largely an introvert and I'm often uncomfortable with people, the way that I first learned to deal with that was to play along. How do I learn to act more or less like everybody else, right? Mm-hmm. And then at some point you realize, like, this isn't doing me any good, and it's certainly not doing anybody else any good. And so you start refining it, you know, which I think for most of us is a pretty lifelong process.
Sure.
That you go, okay, what's my story here? Is that real? Am I cool with it? Am I cool with who I really am? And is that something that I'm willing to express? Is that something that's appropriate to express in this place, right? That moves into kind of the Buddhist ideas of right use of speech and things, you know? And I would say that, you know, there's a lot of that thinking, though I'm not, you know, I do read a lot and spend my time in there. I don't consider myself a Buddhist at this point, but that's one of the things that informs a lot of my thinking, is the questions that come to my mind from that angle of, is what I'm doing okay to me? Do my actions match my ethics?
Yeah, abso-fucking-lutely. Yeah, this is something I think about so much too. And it's sort of like right in this vein here, I'll just like iterate really quick here, like this idea that you've got these things that you can control, right? Your thoughts, your words, and your deeds.
Right.
And so, yeah, I've been thinking about this for, gosh, I think the better part of my life, and sort of like trying to find these different balances of, this is like a way that things like sort of like iterate fractally out of a person, right? It starts mm-hmm. with your thoughts, and those inform your words. And words are sort of like this middle ground that float in between like thought and action. Like words sort of become like fully realized when they're like maybe put into action or written down or whatever, like, I don't know, but I sort of see it as like this idea of like how things manifest. I can't always control my thoughts, right? Like, there's this like sort of check and balance at each one of these stages too, which is a really interesting thing to play with. And like, I don't know, I'm hoping we could have a little bit of a philosophical conversation about that.
So I'm definitely in the camp that if I don't actively work on it, my discursive mind is just a fucking crazy mess.
Yeah.
And not everybody is there, but everybody has some version of it. This is not something that really goes away, right? Mm-hmm. And so that idea that if we're trying to get control of our situation, we have to start with us, because that's what we have actual. We hold the levers, at least in potential there.
Sure.
You know? And so, yeah, where do you put your head? What patterns do you run of thought? And is it good for you?
Yes.
And this is a judgment call. And is it good for you that your mind goes where it goes? And if not, is that something you can change? And to me, this is like the most basic question, probably. And so that's the thing that I think is really interesting from, I think that's why you have to come up with a method to look at that. And for me, that kind of sitting meditation is the best, but there are others that people use. That's also why I walk and why I ride my bike, is those are spaces where I do really get enough clarity that I can see what my mind is actually doing. And then it's this next step from that, right? Where you go, okay, so now I can get a little quieter and I can see that it's actually, that I'm having a conversation, right, internally, or that I'm telling a story internally. Let's pick something and look at it. So let's think about this relationship or my work or my health. And let's see what I think about that and see what stories rise up there and see if they make sense. See if my emotional reactions that rise up in these things have any ground, right? Do they have a real basis or are they purely reactive?
Are they about this story or about a story that happened a long time ago? Or yeah.
Yeah, you know. And then even the thing of like, okay, I had this experience and I'm now really angry. And so I'm going to go and sit with that and go, I'm really angry about this. Is that's an interesting question. Is this what I'm angry about? And what am I telling myself about my anger? Am I telling myself that it's justified? Am I telling myself that there's no way I could be anything other than angry? Am I telling myself that I'm just an angry person? What are those stories each, how do they play out? So let's look at that now. Am I just an angry person? Because if I am just an angry person, then that is theoretically my only emotional range.
So you wouldn't even notice if you were angry all the time, right?
Yeah, that's just who you are. So maybe there's something else going on. Maybe you have a tendency to anger. Okay, what's that about? What situations or what thought processes do I end up that lead me to be angry? And then you can kind of roll it. You go, well, when I talk to people about this, when certain people say certain things, they make me angry. Okay. So how did they get their hand on that lever that made me angry? Because I don't know that that's available to them. And from my perspective, no one holds those levers. Those levers are all on us. We hold those levers because anybody could do anything to us. And it wouldn't necessarily make us happy, make us angry, make us sad. Those are our, we did that. And again, you want to talk about getting comfortable with discomfort. Playing in these zones are not comfortable, I don't think, for most people. And so then if we look at that and go, okay, so if I'm looking at things more deeply, what do I actually do when these things come up? When I pull my trigger, because I'm always the one pulling my trigger, what do I say? What's the story that comes out, right? Start there. What's the story? I am feeling this because of this. This happened, then this happened, then this happened. What's the causal chain that I see? And then this leads out to what do we do about it? And this can be really gross, right? We can see when we're really looking at it honestly going, okay, I got set off by this. This set off this chain of thought led to me telling this story either to myself or to the world wider, and then I did something. Again, is this good? Was this intentional? Did this actually, is this a pattern that I was in control of? Or was I just knee-jerking? And so we can use kind of these processes of kind of interrogating these things to begin to take control of ourselves. To go, okay, what if I pulled back from speaking as much when I can tell I'm not at my best, right? What if I instead go, why do I think that is appropriate for me to get involved in? Maybe a tweet storm online or something, right? What's my intention with what I am saying? And sometimes this is easier to see with other people. Like if I'm saying this to my partner, what am I trying to impart? Am I trying to give them information? Is it information that they asked for? Is it information that they're seeking? Would it make sense to ask them if they're seeking information? Is it that I'm feeling like I'm not really a part of the conversation and I want to be, so I need to bring myself into this stream so that I can feel like I'm more involved, even though it's really maybe what they're actually trying to do is that they need somebody to just listen to them, right? I'm horribly guilty of this. And then we can kind of carry that out and look at at our actions. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting. It's like we need to like have, I feel like if we were to bring it into kind of modern parlance, if everything that I was going to say or do went to the drafts folder until the following day, and then my job, you know, in the morning when I'm clear is I'd get up and have some tea and meditate and get centered, and then I'd go through my drafts folder and decide what I should send. Things would work better.
You're kind of validating some of my social strategies, actually.
I would love to hear more.
I do this sometimes, like, and this is getting better, you know, I'm working on it, but in the past I've, you know, had a lot of issues with social anxiety, and like I'll draft an email and like I'll maybe think about it for like a couple hours and like I'll come back to it and like I don't really like the way I phrased, and it's like, it's so silly. It's a huge waste of time and energy, but also maybe has saved me from saying things I regret. Although I still say things I regret. I'm not trying to imply that I don't, but yes.
I certainly do. Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting though, because it is, we're kind of in this, if we look at it again and stuff that you and I have talked about a lot, is we're in this incredibly reactive binary thing. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think you brought it up last time we talked, but it may have been in private or I don't know, but where you said it, my memory is that you said something along the lines of, it's interesting that we have all of these processes where we're trying to get our tech to be able to operate more like a person. Mm. And we're trying to get our people to operate more like our tech. Hmm. I don't know if this was you.
I'm trying to, I mean, like, I've been thinking a lot about that relationship recently, but I don't remember. Regardless, yeah. Interesting stuff.
Right. So it's like, if we're in this position where everything is, there's multiple ways you can think about, most people probably know this, but just in case people don't, when we're talking about binary thinking, it's yes, mm-hmm. black, white, on, off. It's a switch. It's a switch, and it's a switch that doesn't have a middle position. Mm-hmm. And so I think people can see that in most contexts, that way of thinking is going to lack nuance. Mm-hmm. And yet, again, our media, our social media, all that stuff is like calcifying this like incredibly weird divisions, right? We think about it as far as like mostly right now, at least in the United States, we're viewing it politically. But it's really weird. It's an incredibly strange thing.
It's really weird. It's almost like social media is like a tool for social control. It's so strange.
It's
so weird.
It is very strange. I agree with you. It's an odd thing that would be used in that way. But so a lot of this is really kind of trying to dig way below that. And I think that that's one of the keys to using magic to improve our situation, is to really use it to try and go, and this is not, yeah, what is really going on, and not in a conspiracy way, not saying that there aren't conspiracies and things like that, because there are.
But in a meta way.
But like in, right? A super meta way, like what is going on in my life, and does my life reflect what I would like it to on the levels that I do have control of, and then to see if we can expand a little bit beyond my beliefs about the things that I can influence. But we start at the center, right? We start at, what do I think I am, and what do I think I want to be, and do I have an ethical base? And if so, what is it? And do my thoughts reflect that? Do my words reflect that? Do my actions reflect that? And am I okay with getting really messy and really uncomfortable to see if I can bring those things into greater alignment, which isn't, again, it's not easy. And it's not, I don't think for very many of us that we know, like we can't say, oh yeah, I know all of these things should be just like this. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, it's like you wade into the river and there's all this pushing against you saying you shouldn't be doing this. You should just be going with the flow. You should just be saying left, right, yes, no, on, off. And instead what you do is you start digging around in there and going, okay, what's going on in here, in me, in how I am in this river? what are the things that are really sticky that I get caught on all the time? What are my triggers? What are my points of constant attachment? What are the things I can't let go of? And get conscious about them. I'm not saying you have to let go of all of them, but be conscious of what they are and see if they make sense. And this is the process that I am in. And I think it's the process that a lot of people are. And so in a way, some of, again, all these things have different layers. Some of what Changeling is kind of a supportive. Like, if you're playing in here, I'm not saying my suggestions are the ones that will work for you, but I'm in here too. I am with you in this process, even if our process looks different. The specifics that I bring up may not be the specifics that gel with you, but you're not alone. It's interesting. If I think about it, that's kind of a big piece in here. It's like there's a lot of different angles of approach, and none of them are generally quick fixes. And none of them are going to lead you to a glorious life where everybody goes, oh, look at all the hard work somebody put in to do this. You know, maybe your partners will, maybe your close friends will go, okay, we have a better version of you now, and that's cool. Maybe they won't. They might not like it.
Sure. But you'll know.
You'll know.
Yeah. And it will be a huge difference for you. Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right, Aiden. Well, thank you so much for being willing to come and talk to me about all this stuff today. Is there anything that we didn't like touch on that you wanted to mention?
No, let me think. My always answer is no, I don't think so, but let me think. No, I mean, I think if there is something that I do that I would, is just to say, like, you know, this is a very hard time in the world, and that it's not like the world isn't always having hard times and there aren't all these cycles of stuff, but from my perspective, in the part of the world that I am mainly involved in, and know about, this is the hardest period of time that I've been through. Not explicitly for me, I've personally been through worse points, but if I look at the kind of struggles that the majority of people are going on through, it's a rough period.
It's kind of a mess.
It's a mess. And my kind of work and what the allies, I think, were really on with this was like, and it's a good time to do the work, because I and they don't see right now a path that leads to where we are in kind of rainbow unicorn land as a mass anytime soon. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's like acknowledging that, like, yeah, it is really rough. And the work that any of us can do to get ourselves more in line again with kind of who we desire to be and to mate ourselves to our ethical core is really everything. And I think that that's very doable. It seems like an immense task sometimes, and I'm not saying it isn't, but it's very doable to get, you know, I think it's one of the things we've talked about is getting a little closer, right? I think we talked about that in Weaving Fate, is that it's just like, you know, keep moving in that direction and know that you are not alone in trying to do this work. And there's a lot of noise that is very interested in you and all of us not doing this work, and decide if you want to give your time to it.
Fuck yeah. And I just want to add one more thing here. Like, I really like what you've done with this book because of how much you focused on praxis over label. And I have this written down here. You're putting the craft before the witch, and not in terms of the practitioner, but the label witch, which I really like. So,
yes. No, I like that. That's, yeah, I think that that was, yeah, I think that kind of, it was also why it was interesting. It's like the book started with the praxis section before the qualities. Mm-hmm. And that was why that moved. I kind of did a major rewrite to change that. Like, you know, now the qualities section is actually the more important piece here. That's the piece where I'll give people all the tools I can that make sense that aren't in my other books that will work well within the container that the book is. But let's go for the reality before we try and describe it.
Oh yeah.
All right. Well, is there anything that you would like to ask me before I let you go?
I think we're going to talk about that later.
Okay. Hell yeah. We are going to talk a little bit later about the Green Mushroom Project. So this will be not be the last that my listeners have heard from you for sure. So, hell yeah.
But that is it. Yeah.
All right. Fuck yeah, Aiden. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, dude.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Okay, thanks again so much to Aiden. Check out Changeling, A Book of Qualities, as well as his other books, Weaving Fate and Six Ways. There will be a link to aidenwachter.com where you can find all of his stuff, and it's totally worth checking out. He's got a very dope aesthetic. As was indicated at the end of our conversation, Aiden did indeed hang out and join me for a chat about the Green Mushroom Hypho-Sigil Project, which is a large-scale group working that you can be a part of. Hypho means web. There will be a bunch of links in the show notes about it, and there are several episodes of the show in which it is discussed as well. Aiden has a lot of interesting insight to offer in the chat that we had, which will be part of the next episode, Chapter 2 of the Green Mushroom Project Audio Grimoire. That will be coming out on the new moon, which will also be April Fool's Day and Fungal Friday, so that's fucking rad. It's going to be a really fun one. With a good mixture of intelligent ponderings about imaginal or astral magic, and working with the Green Mushroom Project Astral Temple. There's also some advice and encouragement for newcomers, as well as the requisite number of dick jokes, all important stuff to the project. Humor can be a powerful medicine indeed. In addition to featuring the all-purpose badass Aiden Wachter, the episode also has a panel discussion, which features Yara from Faithblind Council Podcast and Administrism, as well as Josh, who's going to be joining me in the future for an episode about chaos magic and the solar punk movement. Stoked for that. Also on the panel is Miguel, the Rabbit, Shane, as well as our special guest Flood, host of the XV Planis podcast, which is a show that we are stoked to have recently welcomed to the Green Mushroom Podcast Network. We talk a lot about perception in the episode, so I'll be using the Luxa from the Future device to present a sort of classic epistemological thought experiment about perception and knowledge. It's fun stuff. Stoked to be presenting that episode soon. Also stoked about a new collaborative guided meditation that the Green Mushroom Council is putting together. It's written by Shane Thomas with a bit of help from me. He did the lion's share of the work, though. And the voice work will be done by Manu, whose sultry tones you can hear on The Woodland Show, a very cool storytelling podcast that he makes. There will be a link to that in the show notes. I'll be doing the production and sound design for the meditation, which has a sort of fun choose-your-own-adventure style to how it ends. Before we publish it, we're going to be conducting a ritual to evoke the Helper Servitor, which is featured in the exercise, and there's going to be a sort of Easter egg in it, which we are curious if people will find. So excited to see how this experiment goes. I'm very lucky to have the opportunity to interact and collaborate with so many cool people. Much love to everybody participating in the project, regardless of what that looks like for you in your practice. You can treat yourself to a listen to all of the great shows here on the Green Mushroom Podcast Network. We've got Ad Hoc History, Administrism, Faithblind Council Podcast, Lux Occult, obviously, Unearthing Paranormalcy, and Smuts Up. And we are very pleased to be welcoming XV Planis, Primordia, as well as Grog Gnostics to the mix of spooky fun. So fuck yeah, check out the show notes for links to all of their stuff. Also check out the show notes for links to the Occulture Jammer project on Instagram. It's super dope. Thanks again so much to Joy for sitting down with me to chat about it. And thank you so much for taking the time to listen. Making this show means a lot to me, and it wouldn't be possible without the support of listeners like you. So cheers. I appreciate it. If you're into what I'm doing here, you can help me by spreading the word. Tell your friends, your enemies, and your lovers, or post about it on the dreaded social media. You can help me buy books and curtail other costs by supporting the Lux Occult Patreon, which will also give you the option to take a bibliomancy break with me. There are no tiers or levels or whatever, so give as you will.
And thank you so much to those of you who are already doing so. It really means a lot. I always welcome people's thoughts, questions, comments, suggestions, or arcane revelations. And you can reach me at luxoccultpod@gmail.com or find me on Instagram at luxoccultpod. As I mentioned earlier, don't forget to check out Honquinox, the We the Hallowed Spring Equinox streaming event. That is fucking difficult to say. This will be on Sunday, March 20th. Check out the show notes for a link to that. I made a video a while back for one of the tracks from the new Erotic Sound Magic album I've been working on, and I'm stoked and also really nervous about releasing it. I want to give a shout out to T.A. Grady for the cool graphic design which I'm using for the project. Much appreciated, dude. There are going to be a lot of really talented people presenting at the Honquinox event, so very honored to be included. All right, some final thoughts here. Aiden mentioned that his allies often encourage him to work in ways which are distinctly uncomfortable. This track's super hard. This is something that actually just came up during a ritual we did recently for the Green Mushroom Project. So shout out to everybody who joined us for that. It can be kind of gross and awkward and even sort of temporarily destabilizing to do some types of work, but moving towards the feeling of pushing against one's own internal inertia can be incredibly rewarding in the long run. Also, Aiden brought up the point that so many of these types of, like, sayings about this stuff are cliches, so here's another one. Hurt people hurt people. Uncomfortable though it may be, the case could be made that making repairs to the vessel of the self, or whatever term you prefer, is not only in one's own pragmatic self-interest, but is also an ethical behavior in terms of how you're going to fit into the ecosystem of your social structures. The rest of the cliche saying that I mentioned is that healed people heal people, which I suppose is a bit more pithy than the way I stated it. Anyway, I found it necessary to do a fair bit of this distinctly uncomfortable work in recent years, and honestly, I feel like I'm fucking ages behind where I should be in terms of my own personal development. I think it took me a long time to gain the strength and the honesty with myself that I needed to confront some of the issues that I had, and I'm still dealing with, right, from time to time, which I'm told is actually super common experience, so I guess I'm in good company. This being said, I suppose that the whole line of reasoning about all this being some, like, admirable ethical endeavor or whatever might simply just be a sort of balm or a little feather I can put in my cap to make me feel better about how hard and shitty it's been. Unclear. Probably some kind of mixture there. I don't know. Regardless, hard and shitty though it has been, I feel grateful for the pressure of all of it. It's helped me hone my edges and become stronger and more organized. Things seem much less scary and confusing than they once did. I'm still figuring it out, and I likely always will be, but as Aiden mentioned earlier in the interview, this is not a unique thing. He said that he's in the process of doing this type of work too, so I'd like to reiterate the point that he made. If you're going through some rough shit, or doing some maybe long overdue personal work, or whatever hardship you might be tangling with, you're not alone. You can look over and see me next to you, breaking bottles and crying into a box of wine. That's a joke, but shit does get intense sometimes. And when things get too overwhelming and it seems like further progress will not be possible, it's okay to take a beat, chill out, take a deep breath, and to remind yourself to resist. Resist by maintaining sovereignty of the self. Resist by maintaining love of the self. Resist by maintaining fierce loyalty to love and pleasure. Resist with acts of radical kindness. Focus on the path to better times. Fuck yeah. I was going to end by doing some bibliomancy with the book Journey to Ixalan by Carlos Castaneda, since I did this in the first episode, which featured Aiden. I thought it could be a nice way to tie it back, but as I was looking for the text in my office, which over time has grown to increasingly resemble a sort of book sorcerer's lair, another little paperback jumped off of the shelf and let me know that I should use it instead. I selected a poem at random, but as is so often the case with this stuff, I feel like it's fucking perfect. For me, it's actually a great tease for an episode featuring Esoteric Eddie for a conversation about Lucifer, which will be coming out after Chapter 2 of the Audio Grimoire. So keep an ear out for that. All right, this is a poem by Sandra Cisneros from her book Loose Women. I fucking love her work. This is called Your Name Is Mine. Your name is mine, and holy to me, and your spirit, and that twin of divine, death granted me in sex, a complete breath, and this silence I trust and howl, this body, this spirit you gave me, a gift of Taxico rain, fine as silver, an antique pleasure, obsidian and jade, the centuries I knew you, even before I knew your man, sex, mother me, the elegance of your jaguar mouth. Fuck yeah. If you like poetry, you should definitely check her stuff out. Okay, and finally, this is episode number 42, and I don't feel it would be proper to end without at least making a comment in reference to the late and great Douglas Adams. 42 is, indeed, the answer to life, the universe, and, well, everything. I hope this episode has provided you with some questions. Thanks again so much to Aiden Wachter and to Joy for joining me, and thank you for listening. Don't forget to resist, to stay strong, and to stay fucking curious.
Lux Occult is part of the Green Mushroom Podcast Network. To hear more great independent productions like the one you just listened to, visit our catalog at tgnpodcastnetwork.com. Welcome to XV Planet. Greetings, friends, fiends, and lovers of strange and wondrous things. My name is Flood, and I am the host of XV Planets, a bi-weekly podcast of the odd and unusual. The core of XV Planets is a documentary-style exploration into paranormal investigations that I and my ever-evolving group of magical misfits conduct. We take a look at the history, the mystery, then go see it for ourselves, and then we bring that experience, and on occasion, that evidence, to your ears. Alongside the investigations, you'll find a treasure trove of other content, like interviews with authors, art historians, mediums, UFO researchers, cryptid hunters, fellow paranormal investigators, as well as deep dives into the arts, exploring topics like the Killing Joke frontman Jazz Coleman's magical practices and how that propelled the band forward, and whether or not David Lynch was really conducting occult rituals through Twin Peaks: The Return. So follow XV Planets today and get caught up on the journey, because I can promise you, it only gets stranger from here. I'll see you on the fifth plane.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Jason.
And we're the hosts of an explorative podcast called Grognostics, where we mix in one part of curiosity, one part comedy, one part craft beer tastings, one part education, and yet one part fictional stories. Good lord, that's a lot of parts.
Look, the show's really cool, okay?
I don't know, I'm not so sure now. Sounds more confusing than the time we came over early to your Christmas party last year and found you bawling your eyes out, pantless, mind you, to a Lance Bass Hallmark movie.
That was a phase, Jason. A phase, I tell ya.
Look, if you want to listen, grab a cold one and tune in on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You might even learn a thing or two.
That's Grognostics, Grognostics.
Look, my pants are in the dryer. Lance just happened to be on.
Sure, buddy.